Morgan, and thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Audio Edition podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Full details are at offbeatoregon.com. Check it out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of the Roseburg Blast. This was the time when a truck loaded with dynamite was parked in the wrong place at the wrong time, right next to a building that in the middle of the night caught fire. The result was compared by the pilot of a passing airliner to global thermonuclear war, breaking out with Ground Zero in Roseburg, Oregon. Weird, huh? Here's the story, which, by the way, was first published on February 20th, 2011, under the headline, "When Dynamite Truck Blew Up in Roseburg, It Looked Like Nuclear War." It's hard to imagine what it must have been like in the cockpit of the Frontier Airlines passenger jet flying along at 17,000 feet in the middle of the night when the pilot saw the mushroom cloud rising over an Oregon city. The year was 1959. All over the country, children were ducking and covering to prepare for the nuclear war that everyone knew was a real possibility. Only 2 years earlier, the Soviet Union had sent Sputnik 1 into orbit, demonstrating that they could drop a nuclear warhead pretty much anywhere they liked, the same as we could. Quite why the Kremlin would have picked Roseburg, Oregon as a target would have been unclear. But with a glowing, fiery ball of evidence rising slowly into the air above that little Douglas County city, the pilots can be excused for not asking that question before radioing the Medford Airport Control Tower that global thermonuclear war was breaking out with Roseburg at Ground Zero, an hour and 14 minutes after midnight on August 7th, 1959. Luckily for most of us, they were wrong. What they were witnessing was not nuclear war, but the biggest human-caused disaster in Oregon history. Something still referred to in Douglas County knowingly and with a slight touch of reverence as the blast. The blast involved 6.5 tons of explosives, 13 times the amount used in the state highway department's ill-starred attempt to blow a dead whale off the beach in Florence 11 years later. It left a crater 60 feet wide and 20 feet deep, leveled all the buildings for blocks around, and took the glass out of windows 9 miles away. And it killed 13 people, a number that seems miraculously small considering the scale of the destruction. Not that that would be any consolation to people who lost someone in the blast. Here's how it happened. George Rutherford, a truck driver for a Washington company called Pacific Powder Company, was making a delivery to Gerritsen Building Supply in downtown Roseburg. But he got there after the business had closed for the day. So he parked his truck next to Gerritsen's and walked 3 blocks to the Umpqua Hotel, where he checked in for the night. Inside the truck were 2 tons of dynamite and 4.5 tons of blasting powder. A few feet away from it was a building that a few hours later would be completely engulfed in fire. No one knows how the Gerritsen fire got started. All the evidence is, shall we say, gone. It might have been a pile of oily rags bursting spontaneously into flame. It might have been a hobo's jungle fire by the railroad tracks. It might even have been an employee's cigarette left in the wrong place hours before. What everyone does know is what happened when the flames got into the barrels of paint thinner and kerosene and other flammable spirits kept in Gerritsen's warehouse. The fire got very big, very smoky, and very toxic, very fast. The alarm was sounded around 1 a.m., when a young mill worker named Dennis Tandy, driving home with his pregnant wife in their tiny air-cooled Fiat, noticed the fire. After calling the fire department, Dennis stayed to help. Marilyn, his wife, stayed in the car about a block away. A quarter hour later, she would suddenly become a widow, and that tiny, flimsy-looking Fiat 600 would save her life. Firefighters were on the scene within 2 minutes. With Tandy's help, they started battling to suppress the fire in Gerritsen's. Fueled by paint products, the smoke was thick and poisonous and pouring past Rutherford's truck, obscuring the placards on its flanks that read explosives. Minutes ticked by. The sides of the truck started to buckle and warp. Then the truck was on fire. Then, when the blast hit George Rutherford, he was racing from his hotel to the truck. Awakened by the sirens, he'd been desperately trying to get to his rig before it was too late, and then, all at once, it was too late. The explosion blew him back toward the hotel and took off a piece of his nose. Bystanders had to restrain him to keep him from running back into the inferno. "Let me go," he kept saying. "I've got to go see how many people I've killed." Several firefighters on the scene were literally blown apart. The mayor of Roseburg, a little later, picked up a firefighter's glove and found a hand inside it. Several people nearby were killed by broken glass, a woman and her daughter slain by the picture window through which they'd been watching the fire, another woman picked up by the blast and hurled into the window of a car dealership. One unlucky young man had a bolt from Rutherford's truck bury itself in the back of his head. He died a month later. Others survived with various injuries. A total of 125 were hurt. In the wake of the blast, Roseburg residents came together to help each other through. Lumber company trucks came downtown and handed out sheets of plywood free so people could board up their blown-out windows. Shopkeepers labored for days picking up debris and sweeping up glass. Rutherford's company tried in a very clumsy sort of way to throw him under the bus, but these efforts only drew attention to the fact that they had ordered Rutherford to leave the truck in town for the night. There was a perfectly serviceable explosives depot outside town, but apparently company officials were worried someone would steal the dynamite if it were left parked there, and so they actually had told him not to use it. Perhaps in response to Pacific Powder Company's thumb-fingered attempts at blame-shifting, the Douglas County District Attorney filed an indictment for manslaughter against the company, but did not file any charges at all against Rutherford. Eventually, the Oregon Supreme Court ruled that a company couldn't be prosecuted for manslaughter, and nothing came of this. But Pacific Powder could, and did, get sued by a great many people, as did Rutherford. The company in the end paid out a little over $1 million in damages. This incident, as can well be imagined, cast a shadow over Rutherford that stayed with him the rest of his life. He died in 1996. Within a few years, insurance payments and other assistance had financed a rebuilding of downtown Roseburg. Other than a few plaques around town, a visitor today would never know anything like this had happened. Still, the blast cast a long shadow. Quote, "Years later, when I was in the service, guys would ask me where I was from," historian and Douglas County native Dale Greenlee recalls. "When I'd say Roseburg, Oregon, 90% of the guys would look at me and say, 'The blast!'" Well, that's it for today's episode, and if you are listening for the first time and want some more information about Offbeat Oregon history, you can get everything at our central website. Our anchor page, offbeatoregon.com, contains the complete catalog of about 190 columns going back to 2008, plus links out to audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and to the Facebook page and Twitter feed, in case you'd like to join the conversation. The website is also where you'll find full citations to sources for this story, which include works by Barry Serafin and Brent Wolfe. Our theme music is a track titled Old Man's Waltz by the Atlas String Band. You'll find them at atlasstringband.com, and it was written by Carmen Ficarra. Are you coming to Corvallis anytime soon? Drop me a line. Let's get together and grab a cup of coffee and talk history. I'm serious about this. Nobody ever takes me up on this offer. I make it every single time. But just drop me a line at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. This podcast is proudly in the Creative Commons. Details of the Creative Commons license are at offbeatoregon.com/cc. Well, that's it for today. Tomorrow morning, we'll talk about one of the last company towns in Oregon, the town of Valsetts, Oregon. Not only one of the last company towns, but an incredibly soggy place. Got 3 times more rain than probably the rainiest place you've ever been, unless you're on intimate terms with the Olympic Peninsula up in Washington or someplace like that. The entire town was dismantled in the early 1980s, and today you could go there and you would never know it had ever even existed. Interesting story. It's coming up. Look for that after about 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. In the meantime, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.